it's ready to go. The last 2 weeks we discussed the disease of tsaras and the healing process of tsaras, and we mentioned that tsaras is primarily brought to this world as a punishment for the sin of lashon hara, of evil speech, of slander, maligning others. And I wanted to take a week just to focus a little bit on the idea of lashon hara itself. Lashon hara is a broad topic with many, many specific rules and regulations, when not to say, what you can say, what you shouldn't say, how you should say it, etc., etc. It's a popular topic these days. I don't mean lashon hara, I mean speaking about lashon hara. Hopefully lashon hara itself is not too popular. But it's something very popular, people talk about it a lot, and for good reason. But I wanted to give kind of a broader perspective on the evil of lashon hara just for 1 week. It's a topic that could take, you know, months and months to really span the whole topic. This topic was really brought to the forefront by the famous Chofetz Chaim, Rabbi Yisrael Meir HaKohen, from the city of Radin. He lived around the turn of the 20th century in Lithuania, and he passed away shortly before World War II in the early 1930s. And he was probably known as the greatest sage of his generation. He was extremely humble. Often the more humble they come, the greater they are. He was very, very humble. He took very little honor and pride for himself. He produced a few classic books, which really became up there with the classics. One book, he's named the Chofetz Chaim because of his book called Chofetz Chaim. Chofetz Chaim was his book he wrote about the laws of lashon hara. That's Chofetz Chaim. He's also the author of the Mishnah Berurah. The Mishnah Berurah, for those who are familiar, became basically the primary halachic text for Ashkenazi Jews in terms of modern-day halacha. It's a commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, and really became the mainstream source for much, much of Jewish law, which we practice nowadays. So he was somebody who was very humble, but very, very, a major force in Jewish life. And people flocked to him for his blessings, for his advice, for his rulings. And he was the one who brought this sin of lashon hara to the forefront. Meaning, it seems that for centuries and centuries, it was kind of an ignored part of the Torah. The lashon hara was forbidden. And if you look at the Talmud and the works of the Midrashim, lashon hara is looked at as an extremely terrible sin. I mean, a very, very serious violation of God's will. But yet, it's something which, you know, many people are tempted to be involved with, something which is very common, very easy to do, and it became kind of ignored over the years. And as centuries passed, the Jewish people, it wasn't part of their conscience, not to speak lashon hara, they weren't thinking about it. The Chofetz Chaim saw the lack of care about this mitzvah in his generation, and he made it one of his major causes to fight against. So besides writing the book Chofetz Chaim, he wrote a second book called Shmiras HaLashon, which wasn't just laws of lashon hara, but it was trying to teach you lessons about how to guard your speech. It was more a book of lessons and philosophy rather than law. Chofetz Chaim was a book of law. But he made this really his goal, and it was a battle he fought his entire life to make sure people speak appropriately. He was successful. Now, I was recently listening to a recorded lecture from Rabbi Fran from Baltimore, Rabbi Sacher Fran. He's a very well-known, great speaker. You've heard of him before. And he pointed out that, you know, a lot of times we think that we can't change the way that the masses think. We can work on individuals, on ourselves, but you think that you cannot impact the masses. He says he has two modern-day examples where the masses have been impacted. He says one, in America, is smoking. You go back even 20 years ago, 30 years ago, for sure 50 years ago, and smoking was the norm. It was everywhere. I'm not sure anyone here smokes or doesn't smoke. Hopefully no one smokes in here. We hope. But smoking was something which was so prevalent and so normal. And now, 50, 60 years later, smoking is extremely rare. You don't see it often. If you do, it's always relegated into a corner or outside or some smoking room. And it's something which is no longer by any means the norm, and it's frowned upon. And hopefully the next generation is getting the lesson that smoking is something which is very dangerous to their health and they should avoid. And as we see, certainly in America, the amount of smokers has diminished very much in the past few decades.
But not in Israel.
Not in Israel, unfortunately. Yeah, I mentioned America. Not in Europe, not in Israel. You don't see it. Around the rest of the world, you don't see it. But you see, Americans have changed their way of thinking in that now it's on our minds that smoking is unhealthy and not a good practice.
Guard your tongue.
I don't know.
Is that
Pliskin? Maybe very Pliskin. Maybe.
That
would
be great. Yeah, that could be.
Is it different from Shmiras HaLashon?
Yeah, this is the one they wrote in English, you know, more modern book. I mean, I'm sure it's taking Chofetz Chaim's lessons, but it's not the Shir HaSelection, it's a different book. Yeah.
Women are still smoking a lot.
Wait, what?
Women.
Women.
Are still.
So this is just showing women smoke more. Uh-huh. It's interesting. Okay.
And this evil of smoking has, unfortunately, in my opinion, been replaced or given rise to what I personally hate a lot, which is same-sex marriage and homosexuality, and that's another topic.
Okay. I don't mean to get into the topic of smoking, but just to show that it's possible to change the mindset of the masses. Smoking is an example we've all seen and lived through in our lifetime that has gone from a daily norm for most of society to something which is shunned and put into the corner and looked and frowned upon. So Lashon Hara was the same way in Jewish life. Lashon Hara, for a long time, wasn't even recognized as an evil. It was certainly an evil, and factually, objectively, based on rabbinic sources, it certainly is an evil. But the Jewish people, in their mindset, did not see it as an evil. Chofetz Chaim was able to, in his lifetime and after his lifetime, based on his work, on his books, on his speeches, on the way he lived his life himself, he made Lashon Hara something which was in our minds. And now Lashon Hara is something which almost any Jew who's affiliated anyway is aware of the word Lashon Hara. They know what it is. They realize there is an evil in speaking slander about any other person. And it's something which has become part of the Jewish mindset now. And it's a revolution, really, because it was not part of the Jewish mindset if you go back 150 years ago. And Chofetz Chaim made a revolution and put Lashon Hara on the map, essentially. And now, even if somebody does speak Lashon Hara, you feel guilty about it, you preface, it might be Lashon Hara, but I want to tell you this anyways. I mean, we recognize the fact that we should be saying it, one way or the other, which itself is an accomplishment. To understand the evils of Lashon Hara, Lashon Hara is found as one of the worst sins in the Torah. And it traces itself back to the Garden of Eden. The snake himself, in the Garden of Eden, when he convinced Chava, Eve, to eat from the tree of knowledge, so the rabbis accused him of Lashon Hara. The snake came in and through using cunning words and making up stories about what God wanted, he was able to convince Adam and Chava, to eat from the tree. So the rabbis blame the snake himself for speaking Lashon Hara. So the original sin can be tied into Lashon Hara. The brothers, when they sold Yosef into Egypt, later on in the Torah, which began the Egyptian exile and the slavery, the Torah says that Yosef used to bring back evil reports of his brothers to his father. Now the rabbis explain what he did wasn't technically Lashon Hara, wasn't really that bad. They give it in a different perspective, a different framework. Ultimately, the Torah calls it Dibarah, that he gave evil reports to his father, and that's what began the Egyptian exile. You move along, the Jews leave Egypt. Now even in Egypt, there were Jews who reported back to Pharaoh something Moshe had done. And Moshe said, this is quoted in the Midrash, Moshe says that I see the Jews speak evil amongst each other. Now I understand why they're enslaved. You move past that. You have the Jews are in the desert, supposed to enter into the land of Israel. They send out the spies. There's a famous story of the spies in Parsha Shlach. And the spies come back, and what do? They speak Lashon Hara about the land of Israel. That's what they do. They say the land of Israel is too tough. It's a land which eats its inhabitants, something which we cannot conquer the land. And the rabbis blame them as well for Lashon Hara, that one of their major sins of the spies, besides their lack of trust in God, was maligning and slandering Eretz Yisrael, the land of Israel. And that's the story of the spies occurred on Tisha B'Av, 9th of Av, and that's looked at as the start of all Jewish troubles ever since then. And that's all linked back to Lashon Hara, the spies spoke. The rabbis tell us the destruction of the Second Temple. One of the major causes of the destruction of the Second Temple was Jews speaking Lashon Hara to one another. The first temple was destroyed because of the three cardinal sins, idolatry, murder, and immorality. The second temple, the rabbis linked to baseless hatred and Lashon Hara. So we see how terrible that sin is. And that led us into the destruction of the second temple in our current exile. So it's something which stuck with us throughout Jewish history as a major, major challenge, and it caused us much trouble as time went on. Now the evils of Lashon Hara, many of them are obvious. You know, hurting others, destroying relationships, severing ties we have with other people. It can cause conflicts within families, within communities. I mean, those are all clear to us. There's often monetary ramifications that come with it. if you speak lashon hara about somebody who has a business, no one's going to shop in his store, no one's going to take him as a business partner, people don't want to hire this person to give him a job. Certainly there's social implications, because if they hear negative things about a person, no one wants to talk to that person, include them in their events, include them in their lives. The lashon hara has many, many, many ramifications which are very obvious, and unfortunately we've probably all seen and experienced throughout our lifetimes. However, the Chofetz Chaim, in his book Chofetz Chaim, in that book which discusses the lashon hara, he points out that there are 31 possible sins the lashon hara could violate, depending on the situation. 31. 17 prohibitions in the Torah and 14 positive commands could be violated through lashon hara. So he gives some other examples which aren't as obvious, but some other evils of lashon hara which we don't always recognize. So the obvious ones I think we all understand and recognize. I'm going to give you just some of his examples of what are other violations lashon hara could commit in the Torah. So number one, he points out that speaking lashon hara is an expression often of arrogance. Arrogance looked at as one of the worst midos, worst traits a person can have according to Torah thought, because somebody arrogant is showing that he or she is the center of the world, and we believe God's the center of the world. But if you're arrogant, you're showing that it's all about you. It's not about God. It's not about others. So it's an expression of arrogance. Why? Because speaking lashon hara, often either you think you're better than the person that you're speaking about, or you're trying to boost your ego. One of the two. It's either you know you're not better, but you want to knock that person down so you feel good about yourself, or you truly feel you're better than that person, therefore you can slander them, malign them. Well, that is an expression of arrogance. And that's considered a terrible sin in the Torah. If we recognize our own imperfections and our own shortcomings, we wouldn't be so quick to speak about others. Because I'm going to say this person is, you know, a cheapskate. Well, I'm also a cheapskate. So I'm not going to start talking about other people if I recognize that I'm also a cheapskate. I mean, any example we give, if we recognize that we're also imperfect, we all have our own shortcomings and our own failings, so then we're not so quick to speak about others that way. So what this issue, so you might have an issue of arrogance, speaking lashon hara. Lashon hara at times could be viewed as a rebellious act against God, meaning that sometimes a person can violate the Torah, but we understand, you know, even though it's wrong, but we understand the person's desire. Meaning that somebody just can't control themselves because they smell that cheeseburger. And it just smells so good. So they're deep down not rebelling against God, that person. But that person just says, you know, the cheeseburger is just very tasty and I can't control myself eating the cheeseburger. So there we can say, you're not a rebellious person. So the person has to work on self-control. To realize that keeping kosher is very important and therefore you should control what you eat. But if the person eats a cheeseburger, we don't call that act of rebellion per se. Lashon hara is something which often there's no physical gain from it. There's no obvious pleasure in what you're saying. It's just, you know, we're kind of shooting the breeze and I throw out something about another person, you know. And so there, if it's something which you gain nothing from, we can't point to why the person say lashon hara. The person just says it. So that's then bordering upon rebellion against God, because you have no gain you're getting from it. No personal pleasure. We can't understand why would the person speak in that way. So it can be viewed that you're just doing something that's violating God's will, period. And there's no other underlying cause to it.
It's a form of racism, when you think about it.
Form of what?
Racism. Like antagonism. You just feel better.
Just feel better by speaking about
someone.
That person. Downgrade another person. Yeah. Right. Yes.
Is it appropriate if you hear someone belittling somebody, it's the same thing? On your insecure place or
for sure. I mean, it depends on the reaction you'll get, usually, in a situation like that. But if the person will respect what you say, you should say, I'd rather not speak with other people. Something like that, you know?
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to say...
They're not saying it to you. You're three people, and one person is
saying it to the other person.
The other person sitting there. And about the third person, who's, you know what I mean? There's three people there. One person is saying it against the other person.
Oh.
So you know...
That's three people sitting here. The
person
spoken about
is present. The present. For sure you should say something. I mean, again, you always have to judge what's the reaction going to be. Is the person going to receive it well? Is it going to cause another World War III? But yeah, a person should know better, and they'll realize if you say something that they've crossed the line. You should say something for sure. We have a job also of making sure other Jews stay in line. And Chofetz Chaim says one of the issues with lashon hara is that if you don't rebuke the person saying it, then you're not doing your job of rebuking other Jews. We have a job to make sure the other Jews do what's right. Again, assuming that situation calls for it. And if you don't rebuke that person, so now you've ignored your responsibility to rebuke other Jews and put them back on the right path.
But more directly, in addition to speaking Lashon Hara, isn't it a violation to listen to Lashon Hara?
That also is. Yeah, that's also true.
It's more direct. So if you're hearing it, it's like that's also a violation on you.
Right. But hearing it also, you can step away.
Yes, you can say it and I'll see you later.
Right. Yeah, listening to Lashon Hara is also prohibited. Not just speaking, but also listening. Right? That's an important point. The Chofetz Chaim points out as well that sometimes we use Lashon Hara as a form of revenge against somebody else. The Torah prohibits revenge. You can't take revenge against people. And sometimes, you know, somebody did something which we felt slighted us or wronged us. So we then start speaking about them negatively towards others as an act of revenge. I'm going to get that person back. I'm going to go tell all my friends what I saw him do. So not only is that an issue of Lashon Hara, but then you're also violating the Torah's prohibition of revenge. That's also a problem. The Chofetz Chaim points out that if you are in a group speaking Lashon Hara, so then there's the prohibition of the Torah that says, Lo siyachri ragim l'hat l'ra'os, you should not follow the masses for evil. So if you're doing it in a group, so you're also violating that prohibition of the Torah. So if it's between you and another person, then that's your own personal prohibition of Lashon Hara. If it's in a group, so then now you're in a group doing something evil, and that violates another prohibition of the Torah. Often, Lashon Hara could either cause or sustain a machlokus, a dispute amongst Jews. And the Torah says that we should not follow in the ways of Korach. Korach was the one who rebelled against Moshe. Him and 250 of his followers, they rebelled against Moshe, and they are considered the quintessential machlokus. There was an uprising against Moshe's leadership, and that was considered a major dispute amongst Jews. And the Torah tells us you may not maintain and sustain disputes amongst Jews. So often Lashon Hara, if you take one side or the other in a certain dispute, and you start speaking about the other party in a negative way, not only is Lashon Hara, but you're also maintaining and sustaining and carrying on a dispute amongst Jews. There's a prohibition we had in last week's Parsha, Parsha's Bahar, is referred to as Ona'as Devarim. They're not allowed to insult others the way that hurting others' feelings. It's a prohibition in the Torah. We do something in the way, so the examples the rabbis give would be reminding somebody something they did in their past, which they're ashamed of. Or reminding somebody about something their ancestors did that they're ashamed of. And really, any negative speech towards another which would make them feel insulted, hurt their feelings, hurt their dignity, that's called Ona'as Devarim. It's prohibition in the Torah. So Lashon Hara, very, very often, definitely approaches, if not violates, that prohibition as well. Whether it be to the person themselves you're speaking, or whether it be that the word gets back around to them, eventually those words do hurt the person's feelings, cut down their dignity, and that would violate another prohibition in the Torah called Ona'as Devarim. If the subject of Lashon Hara is an orphan or a widow, so then you violate the Torah prohibition of not doing anything to afflict an orphan or a widow. That's another prohibition in the Torah. If the person is, if the Lashon Hara you're speaking is in order to score points with another or endear yourself to another, so that's called Hanifa in the Torah. Hanifa, we have a prohibition to try to kiss up to people in a way which is false. Sincerely you want to become friends with somebody, endear yourself to somebody, that's okay. But Hanifa would be forms of flattery or forms of trying to become close to another in an insincere way. That's called Hanifa.
That's her
Khanifa. What?
The word Hanita, how do you spell it?
Hanifa. Hanifa. Ches. Ches nun yud fe he. Hanifa. Losachnifu esaris is the verse in the Torah. You should not. It's hard to translate. I don't know the best English translation of Hanifa, but it'd be in forms of flattery. Are forms of endearment which are insincere is trying to get you to score points with another. We all know with, you know,
he said kiss
up, right? Kissing up, those types of things. So Lashon Hara at times is because you know this person that you want to kiss up to doesn't like this other person. So you start speaking negatively about this person's enemy, so then suddenly they like you more. Oh wow, you don't like him either? Let's be friends. So then you're not only are you speaking Lashon Hara, but you're also violating the prohibition of Hanifa. Certainly, we speak Lashon Hara. You know, we know we're supposed to love our neighbor as ourself. Classic. And speaking Lashon Hara certainly is disregarding that mitzvah. You're not loving the person which you're speaking Lashon Hara about. There's a mitzvah to judge others favorably. Speaking Lashon Hara typically is pulling out the negative in all situations. You see the negative in that person, not the positive. So not only speaking Lashon Hara, but you are also ignoring your mitzvah to judge favorably, training yourself to judge in a negative manner, to judge others negatively, to be judgmental. If Lashon Hara is spoken in a synagogue in a Beis Medrash, so then also you're violating the mitzvah of revering and respecting a holy place. It degrades and it shames the Kedushas HaMakom, the holiness of the atmosphere of the shul. And unfortunately, often it could be in shul or at a kiddush or at a shul event where people start schmoozing and things come out. So that's also an issue. If the person spoken about, the subject of Lashon Hara, is an elder or a sage or a parent or a kohen, these are all people that you have extra mitzvahs to respect and to honor. And Lashon Hara about somebody of that manner, of that status, will be a double prohibition. Not only is Lashon Hara, but you're also degrading whether it be the parent or the elder or the sage or the kohen. And then certainly, any Lashon Hara spoken, Chofetz Chaim says, is a violation of the fear of God. Because if we truly feared God, we'd keep our mouths shut. So no matter what we say, we're not showing the fear of God. So these are all just a few examples. I mean, he gives a lot more. I mean, this the book, you know, really tells you how terrible Lashon Hara is. And these are some examples of what Lashon Hara can do. So beyond the obvious results you find in relationships, in communities, but you have so many other Torah concepts and prohibitions that are ignored and violated based on Lashon Hara.
Often, the person who commits Lashon Hara lies.
Right. He mentioned that's the book. I didn't say that. He
also
mentioned that too.
Yeah. Violate privacy. Often.
Right.
I mean, it's far reaching.
Lashon Hara is what is true.
Well, there's Lashon Hara in the broader sense, Lashon Hara in the, you know, as a proper noun. Lashon Hara, the proper noun, is only if it's true. Lashon Hara in the broader sense is the whole realm of positive speech versus negative speech, and that would include even false. I mean, we refer to speaking, lying about someone else is referred to as mutzi shemra, that you have now brought out an evil reputation about that person, which is not true. Lashon Hara, in the technical sense, starts pointing out only if it's a true piece of information. Because even if it's true, you can't say it, unless there's some reason. The license one has to say Lashon Hara is in a very specific situation. I don't want to go through the details, but if there is a benefit involved, which is necessary, and your intent is sincere and positive, and you don't have any feelings of ill will towards the other person, etc., etc., then there could be could be permissible to speak Lashon Hara. The situation comes up, as I recommend asking your rabbi first before you speak Lashon Hara, but it comes up very often, someone's entering into, whether it be a business relationship, whether it be a partner for marriage, going on a date with somebody, you know something negative about a person someone's about to date. And you know it's not going to end up good in a marriage. So can you speak Lashon Hara about that person? The answer usually will be yes, but you have to make sure you do it in the right way. So in situations like that, someone's about to hire an employee in a business. You know that this person they hire is dishonest. So there is a license to speak Lashon Hara and tell the employer about the employee they're about to hire, but it has to be done in a very specific way. So I'm not going into the specifics right now, but there are situations where there are real reasons the Lashon Hara should be spoken, and when it should be spoken, then it should be spoken. I mean, because in those situations, you're putting someone else's life at risk, livelihood at risk, marriage at risk. So these types of things, Lashon Hara should be spoken in situations, but it has to be done in the proper manner. Yeah.
You say that in general, it's still a prohibition. And a person cannot on their own decide to say something either for a business or another purpose unless they get permission to overcome the prohibition. In other words, it's not a license to do it when you think that it's going to help somebody. First of all, the first thing is the prohibition.
Right.
Able to pierce the prohibition, you must get the permission or to check it out with the rabbi before you do it.
Right. Yes and no. I mean, yes, to pierce it's definitely, the prohibition always remains in place, and there's times the prohibition could be lifted. The reason I suggest go to the rabbi is because the Torah delineates, I think it's five criteria to be allowed to say Lashon Hara. And you want to make sure you're hitting all five of those criteria. So speaking with the rabbi helps you know what the five different criteria are, and if you are meeting those criteria. That's why I'm suggesting it. Not that you need the rabbi to give you a license per se, but you should know what are the criteria needed to speak Lashon Hara appropriately. It's exceptions to the rule. Yeah, but it's not that the prohibition is not there. It's exceptions to the rule.
For example, can I commit Lashon Hara to help the community?
It would depend on the situation. I mean, the answer may be yes or maybe no, depending on the situation.
For example, force a wealthy man to give money to the community. elderly, and so on.
Right. See, you can't use lashon hara as a form of like blackmail or in order to like make a form of extortion in any way. That you can't
do. Should never be.
No, it'd be the opposite. If somebody stands to incur a major monetary loss because they're about to make a deal with somebody who's a liar and a cheater. So I should go to you. You're about to make a business contract with somebody known to be a liar. So usually then I go to you and I can tell you that, you know, this person, don't trust him. I saw him do X, Y, and Z. And therefore, I'm warning you about it. Like, it has to be done in the right way, which I'm not getting into right now, but there's a proper way to do it. You need to know the information as for sure, as you know, you have to be sure that you're not making up stories or passing up hearsay. You have to know it. You have to say it in the proper way. And you can't be doing it with any feelings of spite or revenge against the person you're speaking about. And there's other criteria as well. But those are all, I mean, lashon hara, as we see, could be something, you know, speech is very powerful, words are very powerful. And the words really, it says, there's a verse. It says, "Achayim v'amavus b'yad halashonim." Death and life are in the hands of the tongue, and it's literal. It's true. I mean, often we know that positive speech could help people really be inspired and uplifted and encouraged. Take somebody who's very down and depressed and give them a positive talk and show your love and affection. That person could change your life. On the other hand, we know that negative speech can kill people. Negative speech can cause people to become depressed, to lose jobs, to lose relationships, to lose friends, to suicide, terrible things. We know that, and it's all just through speech. Speech is something which is so powerful, we have to really think what we're speaking about. I want to take a little deeper approach to this, to understand what is the depth of speech. Why is speech considered something which is so powerful? Why is lashon hara such a terrible sin? And really it begins with the creation of man. When man was created, the Torah says, let's read to you the verse. It says that Yitzar Hashem Elokim, this is chapter 2 in Bereishis, verse 7. Yitzar Hashem Elokim es Adam Afar min Adama. God formed the man from dust of the earth. He breathed into his nostrils, Nishmas Chayim, the breath of life, or the soul of life, the living soul. Adam nefesh chaya. And the Adam, the man, became a living nefesh, a living soul, a living being. That's the verse of the creation of Adam. The Targum Unklus is an Aramaic translation of the Torah. It's printed on the side of just about every Chumash you ever see. It's Aramaic, so for those who don't know Aramaic, it's very difficult to read. But the Targum Unklus was written by Unklus Hagir. He was a convert to Judaism, a Roman convert. He was a relative, it seems, of one of the Roman emperors who became Jewish. The Talmud discusses his story. And he wrote this translation of the Torah. The rabbis tell us that this translation of the Torah actually dates itself back to Mount Sinai. It was a tradition that the Jews had. This is the primary translation of the Hebrew words of the Torah. And even though the Torah itself in Hebrew has many, many understandings and translations, and it could be true on many, many levels, the Targum Unklus is viewed kind of like as the first frame of reference to understand a verse in the Torah. It's a translation, but it's also, some words, when they're translated, need to be explained as well, and he explains this translation. So in this verse, Unklus writes that, I'll read it to you, V'ra'ashem kim yas adam afrim edamma, this he translates literally, the same as the Hebrew, that God created man, dust of the earth, v'nefach b'an po'i n'shmasa d'chaye, and he breathed into his nostrils the soul of life. And now here's where he adds something in, v'havas ba'adam l'ruch ma'alva, and the person became a speaking spirit. So Targum Unklus writes that when it says in the Torah that the neshama met the body, the soul met the body and became one, became a human being, at that point the human being became a speaking soul. That created the power of speech. That's what he says. So many, many great Jewish thinkers point out, based on this Targum Unklus, that we see that the human being is made up of a soul and of a body. That's how we view the human being. And the connection of a soul in a body, that creates the power of speech. That's where it comes from. So let's, I would understand a little bit what that means. We'll explain that. But that's where the whole concept comes from. The unique point that the human being has over the animal world is speech. It's that the ability to communicate thoughts, communicate feelings. Animals have certain forms of basic communication. But those forms are typically just instincts of survival. You don't have animals relating thoughts, relating feelings, relating ideas to one another. It's just, you know, they're able to say, you know, there is a herd of wolves coming from the east, let's go to the west. Or they can say there's food over there near the trees. They have ways to communicate those types of things. You find that even animals can communicate certain hunting type plans. You know, you see videos of, you know, different types of animals who are able to kind of strategize and hunt other animals in groups. So that's it's a form of communication. But ultimately, it's instinct, and it's all for the form of survival. Only the human being can take deep thoughts and deep feelings and ideas and emotions and, you know, inventions and things and relate them out to the world. Animals don't express themselves in that way. It's not a self-expression of the animal. It's just an instinct for survival. The place of connection between the soul and the body, that's what comes out through speech, is what we're saying. And what's the idea? If you just think about speech, you take something that's totally abstract. You take a thought, which doesn't, it's a thought, it's not physical, it's an abstract idea. And when you speak, you've made it a reality. Now it's in the world. Now people know about it. Now others can relate to it. It becomes something real. The Hebrew word for speech is dibor, which is from the same root as davar, an object, because speech makes something an object. Speech makes something real. God created the world through speech. You know, we talk about the God that created the world in 10 statements, and that's because the speech itself, concerning God, it doesn't really have much meaning. You know, God doesn't have lungs, and God doesn't have a breath, and God doesn't have any way to create speech. There's vocal cords. And when we say that God created the world through speech, it means that God took something just totally abstract, these ideas, these things which were totally out there, and made them into a physical reality. That's creating the world through speech. And we do the same thing. We think, we have ideas, we have thoughts, we have emotions. And when we speak, when we communicate to one another, we're able to bring that out and make it a reality in this world. So speech is the main place where you find the uniqueness of the human over the animal. You know, animals might be stronger than humans. Animals might be faster, more powerful, more cunning. You know, animals can do a lot that we can't do. But what we can do that animals cannot do is we have the power of deep human thought, and we can bring those thoughts out into a physical reality. That's what God did in the creation of the world. There was a very early commentator called the Akedas Yitzchak, Rabbi Yitzchak, I think Abu Lefio was his name, and he has a long, deep commentary on the Torah. It's a book which is very difficult to pick up and just read, you know, but he has a lot of very, very important ideas in that book. And he explains that, you know, both the ideas of thoughts and speech, they work together, because thoughts is your inner speech process. And then what we call speech is bringing it out to the outside. But really, human beings have the advantage over animals in the fact that they can think and they can speak. And that's all part of the same power of the human being, that we're able to formulate ideas, formulate thoughts, and then bring them out into reality. So Hashem endowed the human being with speech to fulfill a goal in this world. To bring the world to its goals, to benefit society, to be able to reach up to the heavens through studying Torah, through prayer. That's what speech is supposed to do for us. If we take speech and we use it for something worthless or damaging to others, so what have you done? You've taken your unique human quality of speech. He says it's like taking the royal garments. Let's say the king gave you the royal garments, and you take and put them onto a donkey. That's what he said it's like. Because you've taken something which is your unique human facet, which is speech, and instead of using it for positive, constructive purposes, you've used it either for worthless things or for negative things. There's no greater shame to a gift of God than to take it and use it in that way. The rabbis quote a verse, Nezem Zahav Ba'af Chazir, taking a beautiful golden ring, sticking it to the nose of a pig. That's what it is. When you take your speech is your golden ring. Your speech is your greatest gift. It's our greatest jewel. It's something which is our unique gift from God, which we have, the animals do not have. If we take that and we use it for negative ways, in this destructive speech, destructive conversations, it's taking that gold, beautiful gold ring and sticking it to the nose of a pig. That's what we're doing, and rolling around in the mud with it. So on a deeper level, the reason Lashon Hara is such a terrible thing is not just because of the results. Someone can speak Lashon Hara, and sometimes there are no results. Sometimes the word never gets around to the other person, person listening to it never will divulge to anybody else, and it doesn't have to stop right there in that room. But it's still considered a terrible sin. Why? Because you've taken that gift of God, which God gave you, the gift of speech, and you use it for something which was not positive. And that itself is considered a terrible thing. We're supposed to speak using our minds. We shouldn't be like parrots. We shouldn't just kind of be squawking all the time. We have to make sure that we're speaking based on our own thoughts and feelings. And use it for a purpose. Use it for, with benefits in mind. The early philosophers grouped the world of the world into four different categories. You have what's called don't name. You have the world of inanimate objects. You have tzemeach, which is plant life. Chai, which is animal life. And then they call it medaber, speaking life. Because the human beings refer to as a speaker. That's what we're called. We're called speakers. So the whole world was created into four, it was divided into four categories. Inanimate life, plant life, animal life, and medaber, speaking life. Because that is our unique advantage over animals, is dibor, is speech. So that's one deeper idea as to why Lashon Hara is such a terrible thing. A second level to that is that we read in this verse, the creation of man, it says that God, Vipapa Apa Nishma Schaim, that God breathed into the nostrils of Adam, Nishma Schaim, literally the breath of life. And that's where the word neshama comes from the word neshima, which is the breath. That's where neshama comes from. We talk about this because the neshama was the breath of God going into the human being. That's the soul, neshama. And the Hebrew word for breath is neshima. That's breath. Because it's all linked to God breathing in to Adam. So what happens when we speak Lashon Hara, we're taking our breath, which is probably the part of us which can be most closely linked to God, in that it says God breathed the breath of life into Adam. That's the portion of ourselves which is most closely linked to the neshama and linked to God. And speech comes through the breath. Speech, we know we're using the breath to speak. And if we take that breath and we speak Lashon Hara, we're taking something which is so connected with the godliness of a person, with the soul of the person, and we're using it for something evil. If we use our hands, if we use our eyes for a sin, it's still a terrible thing. But that's a little bit more removed from the Nishmas Chayim, from the breath of life God gave us. But when you speak in a negative way, we're taking that breath of life from God and we're tossing it in the trash can. So that's one of the other terrible aspects of Lashon Hara on a much deeper level. Yeah.
Moshe Rabbeinu spoke very often to the Jewish people, right?
Yes.
So he had to speak. He has to. How did he avoid Lashon Hara?
That's a good question. I mean, we can all avoid Lashon Hara with enough fear of God within us. We can control what we say. That's Moshe was on a level where he sensed God at all moments, so he didn't speak. I mean, even to this very day, you find some really great holy people that will not speak a word before they think about what they're about to say. Even if it's not Lashon Hara, even if it's just like, you know, pass me the salt. But our words are precious. Our words are powerful. And there's some people that you can meet even to this very day that you know before they say any word, they think. Moshe, we assume, was on that level. And before he spoke, he thought through what he was going
to
say.
I have to add something that Moshe was severely punished for his anger. That's the reason he didn't get to go into Israel.
That's true.
Because the way that he spoke to the people in such a harsh manner, which is the opposite.
Right. Well, that's not exactly Lashon Hara, but that was an anger. It's a little different. His sister was punished. Miriam was punished for Lashon Hara. And his brother Aaron was punished for Lashon Hara. And Moshe himself, it actually says that Moshe, when he was at the burning bush, so he questioned God, and he said, God, I don't trust the Jews are going to believe in you. And God, at that point, the rabbis tell us, said, Moshe, that's Lashon Hara about the Jews. You don't trust in the Jews. You think the Jews don't believe in me. They do believe in me. You're speaking negatively about the Jews. He was punished for that. So we do find Moshe speaking Lashon Hara that one time, according to rabbinic sources. I mean, after that, we don't find any record of it. But even someone, it's something that the Gemara tells us, the Talmud says that most people at some point will violate theft in some way. Some will violate, you know, commit immorality, have adulterous relationships and the like, but everybody will violate Lashon Hara. That's the Gemara. That's one sin that every single Jew is going to commit sometime in their life. You know, nobody is excluded from that. That's what the Talmud itself says. That's how difficult it is for us. We'll end with this story from the Talmud in Tractate Avodah Zarah. There was a person, Rabbi Alexandri. He came to town and he said, "Man Boichai, who would like life? Who wants some life? Who wants the elixir of life?" And everyone comes and gathers around him. "We'd like to buy some. How do we buy life?" So he quotes a verse in Psalms, which is where the Chafetz Chaim's name comes from, the name of his book. It says, Misha Chafetz Chaim, who is the one who desires life? Oh, Yom Lirastov, who loves his days, wants to see goodness. That says, Mitzor Shoncha Mira, guard your tongue from evil. Misfasecha, your lips, without mirror, from speaking deceit. We should avoid evil and do good. Bakeshom, seek peace, rafeyu, and pursue it. So he told them, it's a very simple verse. It says, who desires life? You guard your lips from evil. You guard your tongue from deceit. That's where life comes from. And that's what he told the people. And it's an explicit verse in the Psalms. It's something which is, which was, I guess, put into the word Chafetz Chaim, the name Chafetz Chaim is now synonymous with not speaking Lashon Hara, and that he's drawing his name from that verse. Who's the one who desires life? So he named his book, The One Who Desires Life. Because if we avoid Lashon Hara, God tells us that that's how we're going to live long days and see goodness in this world, is by avoiding Lashon Hara.
And the original Chafetz Chaim was King David, right?
Well, he wrote the verse, I guess so. Right, he wrote the Psalms. He wrote that verse, yeah.
I am sure that Pirkei Avot must contain a lot of pearls about
Definitely has some. It's not necessarily all over Pirkei Avos, but
so when you're coming
some.
To Lashon Hara, you are not humble, number one. Because you know, right?
Yeah.
And number two, when you're coming to Lashon Hara, somehow you are trying to emulate God. You are using words to show a group of people that you can influence things, right?
That's true.
And change things.
That's definitely part of it. So I can cut someone else down, and I can become better and make the world different. And
it's very dangerous.
Trash us. So,
but I don't agree when I hear that Lashon Hara is worse than murder. I don't agree.
I mean, that is a quote that's said in the Talmud, but you have to understand there's different aspects of it. You know, there's an aspect of Lashon Hara. I mean, I'll tell you, certainly. In one plane, murder is certainly worse. There's a different plane. And I'll just end with this. The plane where you could say Lashon Hara is worse than murder is in the following way. You know, murder is something which can only touch the body. I could take a knife, I could stab a person, but it does not affect the person's soul. Lashon Hara is something that goes much deeper at times. You know, a person's body might be totally there, but when you insult a person, you hurt them so deeply, that's something which affects the soul. So that's a different plane of looking at it.
The person can be bound.
The person could be bound, you're right. But at that point, the hurt you've done to that person is a much deeper hurt than a physical hurt. That's all.
In the same vein, I don't agree with the collective suicide in Masada. I don't agree.
Okay, that's kind of a different discussion. I didn't say I agreed either with that one. But
you don't agree?
That's a different discussion. But I mean, ultimately, Lashon Hara is something, when you use words to hurt somebody, that's a weapon which goes much deeper than a physical weapon. And hurting somebody's soul on one plane is much worse than hurting their body. The rabbis say somebody who embarrasses their friend in public has no share in the world to come. A murderer has a share in the world to come. He can repent and do tshuva. Somebody who embarrasses his friend in public has no share in the world to come. What's the difference? Because if you embarrass your friend in public, that's a hurt which hits the soul. That's like you've taken their soul and stabbed their soul. That's what you've done. You've stabbed their dignity is much deeper than their physical body. A murderer is only touching the body. So from a certain perspective, there is a deeper wound happening through using words for evil than using physical weapons for evil. But from all this, we see that Lashon Hara is something which is very dangerous, very serious, and it's a very difficult challenge we all have. You know, we spend a good amount of our lives speaking. And speaking is a very good thing, and we want to speak with our friends, and we want to be able to share conversations with others. But it's extremely important that we're very, very careful with what we say, and make sure that what comes out of our mouth is positive, is productive, and we'll feel better about ourselves, people will feel better about us, and overall, if everyone spoke positively, the world will be a different place.
Okay,